Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, a cross-generational conversation about leadership and power through a female lens. I'm Ann Doyle, author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders. Monica, my co-host, will be back with us next week. Because our podcast this week is an interview with a trailblazing leader and Olympic swimmer who was named by Sports Illustrated as one of the 100 greatest female athletes of the 20th century. Donna De Verona won 2 gold medals at the 1964 Summer Olympics in Tokyo and became the first female sports broadcaster working at the national level at age 17. And I've been lucky enough to get to know Donna a little because we are both members of the International Women's Forum, a global organization of women leaders. And IWF recently launched their own IWF Game Changers podcast and asked me to interview Donna for their inaugural episode. So we wanted to share it with you.
I think when you're an athlete, you have a wonderful opportunity organically to learn about leadership, team play, setting goals, taking risks, learning that a defeat is just really learning a lesson and that it's a setback so you can recover.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to IWF Game Changers, a monthly conversation with some of the trailblazing members of the International Women's Forum. I'm Ann Doyle, president of IWF Michigan, and your host. The IWF is a global network of more than 7,000 highly accomplished women leaders from 33 nations. They are policymakers, executives, pioneers, and instigators of change, united to advance women's leadership. And each month in the studio, we'll be talking with one of these trailblazing leaders as they share stories of lessons learned and insights gained from their journeys. So let's talk about life in leadership. And our featured IWF member today is Donna De Verona, named by Sports Illustrated as one of the 100 greatest female athletes of the 20th century, and co-founder with Billie Jean King of the Women's Sports Foundation. Welcome, Donna.
Well, thank you very much, Ann. It's a pleasure to be on the air with you.
Well, you know, there is so much that we're going to talk about, not only about your athletic career, but your long career of helping to advance opportunities for women, particularly in sports and leadership. But first, I want to refresh people's memories a little bit. Because you and I are contemporaries, and I remember very well the 13-year-old Donna De Verona, who made the U.S. Olympic swimming team. And then 4 years later, when you made the team again and won 2 gold medals on your way to a career total of, I believe it was 18 world best times and world records. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
And we could go on and on, but I do want to mention Donna was inducted into our International Women's Hall of Fame as well as the International Swimming Hall of Fame. And then at 17, she became the youngest and one of the very first women sportscasters when she started working for ABC's Wide World of Sports. You know, I'm exhausted just thinking about all this.
Well, it's been a long life so far.
Yeah, and lots still to do. But, you know, let's start with a little bit about you, Donna, because you were a world-class athlete long before Title IX began opening sports opportunities for girls. So how did you get involved so young in world-class competitive swimming?
Well, I think, you know, you have role models, and my father was an All-American football player and rower at Cal Berkeley. He's the only ever student to be on a championship crew and a championship Rose Bowl in the same year.
Wow.
And he went on. He would have gone to the 1940 Olympics, but, of course, a war intervened. If anybody read Boys in the Boat, he was a freshman when Washington beat Cal to go to the 36 Olympics, but then 4 years later, Cal was on top. So, you know, there it was 24 years later, and I'm living out his dream in Tokyo, where the Games were supposed to be in 1940.
Wow.
So that helped. And then I had an older brother I used to follow everywhere. Mm-hmm. I liked the games boys played rather than the dolls girls played with.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very close to him. But in those days, you know, my big love was really I wanted to play baseball. But, you know, when they started Little League, they organized little girls right out of the game. So
oh, yeah.
I wound up picking up bats and sitting in the dugout, spending my money on allowance money on bubble gum so I could bribe my way into the dugout. And I fell in love with sports. And fortunately, mm-hmm. I love the water as well.
Mm-hmm. And what about your mom? You mentioned your dad, obviously very important, and that older brother. Where was your mom in all of this?
Well, my moms are so important. Mom was, she helped create the balance. You know, we're talking about balance in life right now.
Mm-hmm.
As we are leading into our round table with women athletes, which we'll talk about later.
Yep.
You know, she got up in the morning and you know, would scramble eggs and put them in a thermos bottle. So when I was through at workout after I got up at 5:30 in the morning, I had some breakfast. You know, she was very calm and very supportive. She wasn't an athlete,
mm-hmm.
But she, you know, she was of that generation where women didn't get the opportunities we had, and she wanted all of us to be able to realize our dreams.
Mm-hmm. Well, from the perspective of where you are now today, looking back on all these experiences you've had, what benefits beyond celebrity and your sportscasting career would you say that sports involvement gave you from a very young age?
Well, I must say I'm thrilled to be on the Leadership Foundation board.
Of
the IWF. Because I think when you're an athlete, you have a wonderful opportunity organically to learn about leadership, team play, setting goals, taking risks, learning that a defeat is just really learning a lesson, and that it's a setback so you can recover. I think those things it's hard to learn those things unless you're maybe a performer or an athlete so organically. And to look at your rival as someone that makes you better. So often women have rivals and
mm-hmm.
they don't look at it that way. But, you know, my biggest rival, Sharon Finneran, when she was inducted into the Hall of Fame in swimming, asked me to induct her. I said, why do you want me there? Because I won the gold medal. She said, because, Donna, we made each other better.
Wow.
We've been friends for life, but we did make each other better. And, you know, you really are in life competing against yourself. You know, you may look at someone as a role model, and you have to, I think you understand that quicker, maybe, if you have the sport experience. So I'm thrilled that the IWF has championed women athletes through its leadership program. We're going to talk about that.
We are definitely going to talk about that. But before we go beyond your experiences, Cher, you've had incredible success, but you also had to have obstacles and very tough times, too. Share something about that and maybe advice for others in terms of, because you certainly were a trailblazer and very, very young.
Well, I think what sports gave me was the resilience to stay in the broadcasting world.
Mm.
You know, I started my first assignment. I had a work permit. I was 17, and I covered swimming live, sitting next to Jim McKay. But, you know, people look at it like it was one step after another. But it took me from the age of 17 to 35 to finally get a sustainable career in broadcasting. And I took a lot of jobs in between.
Mm-hmm.
I think you find that women have to, and especially young people now because of the changing world we're in, but women especially have to juggle and, you know, bounce around. And I found that my advancement came often when I left broadcasting and went to work in the U.S. Senate on something I was passionate about. And so then when I came back to the world of sport, I even had more credibility. I worked in the Senate on Title IX and the Amateur Sports Act to restructure our Olympic Committee, which we're trying to do again.
Uh-huh.
And Title IX, of course, was part of the Civil Rights Restoration Act that opened the door for women to get into graduate school and instead of quotas in law and business and medicine, and opened the door in Title IX, opened the door for women athletes for the first time in 1972. But mm-hmm. that kind of experience, bringing it back to broadcasting and sports, was really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people see a celebrity and they think everything's easy.
Yeah, and you know, you have to make it look easy, because if you look desperate, it's hard to negotiate from a desperate point of view.
Right, right. But it's step, every step of the way. Yep. So, Todd, let's talk about the International Women's Forum. How did you get involved?
Again, through a sports connection. First of all, I had gone to Ernst & Young, that was sponsoring. They were an official supplier of the Rio Olympics, and they wanted to create a program that mirrored their Winning Women program. And, you know, the company helps women scale up their businesses through that program. And they wanted something that matched it. So I said, well, I've always had this dream of helping elite women athletes make that transition, scale up from sport into the next arena. And curiously enough, you know, the universe kind of worked out that I met Dee Dee Corradini, who was, you know, so important to the International Women's Forum, and she loved sports. She had helped bring the Olympics to Salt Lake, and as a lawyer had negotiated with the International Olympic Committee to get women ski jumping in the Olympics.
I remember, that's said, right.
Yeah, I was with Beth Brooke, who was a big executive at EY, in Doha for a conference, and Dee Dee was there. And she said, well, why don't we partner with International Women's Forum? You can mentor, but we can bring you the mentors. And the other added valuable asset of the IWF was something that I've always wished for, was that these women would meet incredible women outside of the arena of sport. And these women that come from IWF mentor our mentees. And the added bonus is that our graduates get to go to the big conference where they hear the best speakers in the world, and they mingle with women they'd never met before. Because women athletes so often are in a silo between the men's sports world and women doing everything else. So we're in our fourth year. Uh-huh. We just picked our fourth class.
Okay.
I'm about ready to go to Portland, weather permitting, for a Nike roundtable. Nike's going to host our athletes because they have a leadership program as well, which gives us an extra a benefit of working with our athletes early on in the program in another environment. So it's exciting.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that, because that Nike roundtable is really one of the pieces of the experience that these world-class athletes have through the WABN. Is that correct?
Yes, the Women Athletes Business Network. And it's really Stephanie O'Keefe of the International Women's Forum Leadership Foundation, who had been nurturing Nike, saying, you know, we'd love to have them on board. And so this will be the first time this class will be able to experience the Nike campus. I don't know if you've ever been there.
I haven't, no. Wow. We're talking about Nike while we're at it. That Serena Williams ad that was
debut.
Oh, wow. Incredible.
It's everything every female athlete feels, feels all in one commercial.
It was awesome. And, you know, about that, I know that Stephanie O'Keefe, the CEO of the IWF, she told me that I know you're going to be interviewed during that Nike roundtable, and I believe it's by Dee Dee Corradini's daughter, Andrea Corradini.
Yes, and that'll be wonderful, because Andrea was instrumental in this relationship as well. So from mother to daughter, we sure miss Dee Dee Corradini. Oh. I know when we picked our first class, we didn't know she had cancer. Mm-hmm. She was on the phone with me for hours to make sure that our first class, you know, was picked well. And, of course, she wanted to be part of it, because she was so instrumental in the partnership.
Yeah, she was absolutely incredible. And for maybe our newer members of IWF, she was one of our fantastic presidents.
That's
right. So let's talk a little bit more about WABN, though, in terms of what is this missing link that it is offering to the world-class athletes? Because people who have never been a world-class athlete may think that, you know, once you have that kind of celebrity or accomplishment, that the rest is pretty easy.
You know what we found out from the 94 athletes from 24 countries in a variety of sports? In fact, we've had 52 Olympians and Paralympians across 36 sports participate so far in our program. What you find is, like any like an actor or a musician, you're so involved as an athlete in your life, just setting goals every day and living in that bubble, that what we've found is when they retire or when they're ready to retire, you know, you go from one day of your life knowing exactly how your life's going to go to all of a sudden it's like you're leaving a whole, you leave a whole way of life from one day to the next when you retire. And oftentimes these athletes don't even realize the attributes they bring to the table, that they're team players. In fact, sometimes they go to an HR, you know, trying to get hired, and the question will be, what's your work experience? And they'll say, well, I haven't been working, I've been training. Instead of saying, I've been working since I've been 10.
Right.
I've been getting up in the morning at 5:30. I have been putting goals out there with no guarantee. They're entrepreneurs as well. I've trusted in myself. I've taken the responsibility. So we find that, and then they need help and trust in being vulnerable to the fact they have to start over. You know, if they want to get into a new profession, maybe they're going to have to carry coffee. Maybe even if they are a celebrity, they're going to have to learn from the bottom up. But being in a community of athletes in this group, they look at each other and say, oh, you have the same feelings I do. Oh, yeah, I'm not embarrassed to say I'm afraid, or, you know, what's the next step, or I need advice. And so sometimes this journey is accelerated because they have this opportunity to learn from their mentees.
Well, it's been fantastic for me to meet some of these athletes at the global conferences, because they go to our global conferences. And I met, you'll have to tell me her name, but she's she's one of the top rock climbers in the world.
Yes.
And yeah, I was like, wow. And I met her and we talked a little bit, and I have a nephew who's a rock climber, and he just went crazy when he heard that I met her. That's the caliber of the women that we're talking about. But I'm interested in, you know, there are three very distinct generations of high-achieving women in the workplace today, and these athletes now are primarily millennials. Isn't that right? And I'm interested in your perspective on, do you see anything different in terms of this next generation of athletes who are transitioning now into leadership, maybe from your generation, my generation?
Well, I see that they're more willing to help each other out and network. You know, I think in our generation, we were the ones that said you got to have women. So many corporations brought in one woman, right?
Yep.
And if another woman came in, you'd look around and say, my job's over.
Yep. She was competition.
We were conditioned that, you know, I still brought other women in at ABC, and I was very much about networking. But I think, you know, when you're conditioned that that's what's going to happen because the powers to be choose that direction, it's hard to trust. I just found with these women, the first three classes, they all form a network. They're all communicating with each other. They're all helping each other. And maybe it's because I had the opportunity in a safe environment to do it, but I see that happening. And I think, you know, the world is changing so quickly. I think they realize that they have to be nimble. You know, we kind of, you know, I went into ABC thinking I might be there all my life. I mean, I did have to struggle. It took me a long time. But the people I worked with from the age of 17 on were there when I left at 50.
Right. Jim McKay.
They were still there.
Exactly. Not the way the world works anymore. And let's talk about sports broadcasting, because you were one of the very, very first women ever to crack that at the national level. I mean, I spent 5 years as a sports broadcaster in the late 70s and early 80s and know how tough it was. Give us a little sense of how it was back then, but then also I'm interested in your perspective on how far maybe we've come, because it's still a pretty tough field for women.
I think it's still tough. I think we're way behind news. And I, you know, we have our sideline reporters, but we're not the executive producers. We're not the directors. The rare person makes it through with unusual circumstances, and you see that reflected in all the organizations. You saw how, you know, the U.S. Olympic Committee has gotten in trouble because it became a boys' club protecting each other, and at the peril of all our young gymnasts that were came in contact with Nasser. But it wasn't just gymnastics; it's gone back to swimming and all these other things. So we're in the process of trying to clean that up. And I must say that Beth Brooke from EY is now on the board of the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Oh, okay.
And she comes. She was the first of her college to be on a Title IX scholarship, and she loved the program, the EY program. So, and she will be at the Nike roundtable. So I think we have someone coming from a very layered background who's going to benefit us at the USOC. But, you know, getting back, you know, it was very difficult. What I did was whenever I work with Jim McKay or Keith Jackson or Kurt Gowdy, I really became someone who would do all the research, give away all my information. And I used to joke and say when Keith Jackson, you know, smoked a cigarette and he inhaled, I had 7 seconds to make my point. because you know, they were in charge. And, and I knew that I had to, you know, just give 1,000%. It was a struggle. It really was. And at some point I used to put my name on every assignment, so I'd try to make them feel guilty, so they'd give me one.
That's your advice.
And then every time you were on the air, it was like, you know, you had to hit the home run, because you might not be on the air for another 3 to 6 months. So I also invested in myself. I traveled all around the world on my own money to know what was going on internationally, and then I was one of the first. Well, I was the only woman in management and on air at ABC Sports, which is unusual because they had to get consent from the board to let me play both.
Wow.
But because it was sports, there was more flexibility. But, you know, I came back to ABC and represented the network on setting up negotiations for rights fees with the Olympic Committee. So I had to learn every aspect of the business to really survive.
But the amazing thing also is that you have consistently continued to give, and a great example of that is you, along with Billie Jean King, starting the Women's Sports Foundation. What prompted you to do that way back then?
Well, way back then, before I met Billie Jean, I was, along with Susie Chaffee, the skier, was traveling around the world talking to International Olympic Committee members saying there should be athletes' voice on the International Olympic Committee. There should be more events. There should be a woman on the International Olympic Committee. There wasn't.
Wow.
So when Billie Jean beat Bobby Riggs, I said to Susie, I got to meet this woman. She's
you didn't know her yet, right?
Yeah, and I did. And I said, we got to start a foundation. Well, you know, she had the money. She was given a check for charity, and she and I kept hounding her and Larry because at the time everybody wanted a piece of Billie Jean. You know, they wanted her to do this and that. And, you know, she started the magazine and everything else. And so finally they used that check to use the money to set up the foundation. And so she's, you know, legally the founder, but I would like to say that we all helped found it with her. And I became, they didn't know what to do. So they said, what's a foundation do? And I'd worked with Eunice Shriver in the Special Olympics, one of my biggest mentors. And I said, these are the things we should do. We should have a day in Washington. We should have an 800 toll-free number. We should have a yearly event in D.C. We should have a Hall of Fame. And I was president from
I think you were the first president, weren't you?
First and chairman. And we started all our programs, you know, our scholarship, travel and training, all those things. And then what was fun is, you know, I had to talk somebody else into being president because they didn't. What does
didn't want to let
do?
You go?
No. And I had Eva Auchincloss, who was wonderful. It was, you know, we all worked for nothing. We all donated our time, and we went from a little organization with our first dinner at the Plaza, where we were afraid we wouldn't be able to pay the bill if we didn't fill the room, to now
and
then
now
the Waldorf, and
right.
Now, and then, and the best part is we have rotating leadership now. Every 2 years, we have a new, you know, up-and-coming athlete or elite athlete take the reins and serve as president. So they learn leadership skills that way.
Well, let's talk back to the International Women's Forum in terms of all the things that you're involved in, and there's so many organizations for women today. What is it about the IWF that still makes it special to you and worth the significant time that you invest in it?
For me, it's such a thrill and a privilege to basically be out of the male-dominated sports world and to meet these women from all over the world. It's very much like, you know, the Olympic movement because it's global. Mm-hmm. It matches our program because our athletes are global. It's something I've always wanted to do, was, you know, intersect with women leaders around the world. And I'm learning a lot. You know, it's a whole new thing, experience for me.
Really, you never stop learning, of course, but for example?
Well, for example, you know, you're sitting in a room with women that have run companies. You're talking about global politics. You're meeting Anuka from the UN, and she has a vision for women of the UN. And because you're networking, you can pick up the phone and say, listen, I have this athlete somewhere. Maybe they're not in our program, but do you have somebody in your local chapter that can mentor them? We found women, and of course the chapters are only as strong as their leadership, but for instance, when we had our big conference in Melbourne, mm-hmm. immediately the chapter decided to bring the athletes into the chapter. And so during that conference, the athletes they had a round table organized for them, because this isn't, you know, this is wonderful. If every chapter could have a relationship with women athletes, it would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And we had the likes of Ellen Sirleaf Johnson, you know, the first president, president of an African nation. Yeah, and that's what's unique about it, I think, is that it exposes you to women you'd never have a chance to meet otherwise.
Well, Gloria Allred, I mean,
right.
You know, at this time in history,
right.
Unbelievable
to
speaker,
have her
and
speak.
So passionate. It was, and I, you know, meeting her one-on-one was wonderful.
Yeah.
Inspirational.
Well, we could go on, and thank you very much. It's really been a thrill for me to get to know you through the IWF, Donna, and that,
same.
As we said, you know, that's one of the benefits of this, of network, to expose you to women leaders from all over the world we just wouldn't meet otherwise, and I know you agree with that. So, would you leave us maybe with a favorite quote or something that has inspired you through your career and maybe continues to inspire you?
It is very simple, but, you know, you can only try your hardest and never give up. Be kind, have humanity, and network with people that are inspiring.
Well, thank you very much, Donna De Verona. You know, I was 13 when you were 13. I was 16 when you were winning those gold medals, and you inspired me then, and you continue to inspire me now.
Well, thank you for the time.
All right. And thanks for listening, everyone, to this inaugural episode of IWF Game Changers, a monthly conversation with some of the trailblazing members of the International Women's Forum. I'm Ann Doyle, president of IWF Michigan, and your host. And we hope you'll join us again as we talk about life in leadership. Thanks for listening to our Powering Up podcast this week. Monica will be back with me next week as we continue our cross-generational conversations about power and leadership through a female lens. And remember, power is the currency for getting things done. Claim yours and put it to work.